Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good morning, everyone. Your host, Chris Deagle here.
Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia.
Enough is enough. They know who we are. It's your host, Chris Deagle, with Business Radio X Alpharetta Studio. We're here in the studio with Joe LaBranch, Warrior to Citizen, a nonprofit organization helping our returning veterans. We have Adrian Queenan, who is with Expand a Brand, a South African who is now in the United States, and he has brought some great advertising innovations to businesses to help them build their brands. And we have Marion Massey, who is a hypnotherapist and success coach. So we really look forward to having everybody on, and thank you so much for coming. You know, did everybody get here without any problems with all the rain?
Did our best.
Well, in Atlanta traffic, that's saying something. So I'd like to kick this off with Joe LaBranch with Warrior to Citizen, who is a wonderful program that's helping our returning veterans with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorders, and other issues reintegrate into society. Joe, can you tell us, where did you come from? What was the motivation for the organization, and how did it get started?
Well, I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I experienced what a lot of today's veterans experience. Vietnam veterans didn't get much of a welcome home. So a lot of the Vietnam veterans went through some hard times, which I did myself, and it took me 40 years to get myself back together. Mm-hmm. But I always told myself that I would help today's veterans so they didn't have to go through what the Vietnam veterans went through.
Yeah. Is this a national organization, is that right?
It will be. We're talking to people up in Pennsylvania right now, looking to open up a facility up there. It's a three-phase program. The first phase of the 28-day program where the veterans come in, stay in residence for 28 days, and their family members come in on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
And what services do you provide to returning veterans? And how do you engage with them initially? I mean, where do you find them?
Well, National Guard mainly. You have also regular Army military people.
I see. Are they referred to you, or do you have an outreach program in the Guard centers?
Well, we work with the Guard centers, the TAG. The Adjutant General of the states, and local programs. The third phase is our community program, which will basically be the national program, where not only do we help the veterans in the first 28 days, we evaluate them over a year, plus we have veteran centers set up throughout the country where veterans and their family members can go in, learn about their VA benefits, be educated, and also we educate the community on what the military go through. A lot of people know what the military is, but they don't really know what they do.
I see. What about reservists? Do you work with reserve centers?
We'll take any veteran that's been in war and experiencing problems.
Now, do you get referrals from people like the SAL Army or other you know, religious organizations? How do people get in touch?
The religious organizations, we're trying to work with them to develop military ministries and implement the community program.
I see. Now you have some rehab centers where you can actually send people. Is that right?
Well, you have your VFWs, and we're talking American Legion and other veteran organizations where they'll be able to go to.
I see. Don't you have a facility in Warm Springs?
We're going to open up a facility in Warm Springs. We're working on gathering funding for that program.
I see. Who do you look to for funding to support your programs?
Well, we look at corporate America. They're the ones who have the money. We look to individuals. We have a website where people can go to warriorcitizens.org and donate. We're working with some major organizations. CBS has agreed to give us some airtime.
I see. Do you work with, I know there are a number of veterans organizations that have sprung up or, to help returning veterans now, which is a great thing for all of those of the Vietnam era. We can all remember the wonderful warm, caring reception we all, that everyone got that came back. This is very different. Do you think the challenges are different now than they were then?
Well, the challenge is that multiple deployments. You go over there for a year, you see the carnage, it's called. You see the loss of your friends. You come home, and people expect you to just, at the snap of a finger, change back into a civilian mode. But you really can't do that because you might be going back over. So you can't lose that military mindset. That's one of the major challenges.
Even with the war in Afghanistan now, obviously winding down, assuming nothing else goes wrong in the Middle East, what could possibly go wrong in the Middle East? That most people up here will be out of uniform here in another year. That's going to be a lot of people, isn't it?
Well, you have 370,000 returning each year, so. The VA has programs for PTSD, but the Warrior to Citizens went out and interviewed 3,800 veterans and their family members, and we asked them, okay, what would you like to see in a program? And we based upon what they told us they wanted. We went to Georgia Tech Research Institute. We went to Georgia State, and they developed a program for us. This is a program... For soldiers, by soldiers. It's not a government program where they come in and say, Chris, here's the program for you. It's the best thing for you. They want to develop the program. They don't want it on a military basis.
I see. So you explain a little bit more about what the difference is between the VA program is and a program like yours.
Our program is a 28-day program. You come in. We teach relationship skills, marriage skills, leadership, how to forgive, not necessarily how to forget. It's going to be very hard to forget, but to forgive. We basically talk to the soldier about the guilt. A lot of soldiers have guilt when they come back because they want to know how come I made it back, my buddy didn't make it back. They worry about their friends still back in their Afghanistan, conflict management is another thing we do, crisis intervention. But one of the most important parts is we do a good job with a veteran, but the spouse, people forget about the spouse. The PTSD affects everybody in your family. It affects the spouse, it affects your kids. So what we do is we're teaching the spouse to identify triggers, and then we teach them coping skills, not just the spouse, but the family members as well.
I see. How about in the workplace? What challenges does a returning veteran have in the workplace?
Well, unfortunately, a lot of corporations and businesses tend to stay away from veterans because they think, well, if you have PTSD, you might go postal.
Well, but isn't that the furthest thing from the truth?
Yeah, of course it is. I mean, veterans are trained leaders. They know how to take directions. They know how to multiple task. They make fantastic employees.
For an employer, having a returning veteran is actually a very big plus.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, we're working with a major company right now who are targeting veterans. They want to hire veterans. They want to make They want to put veterans in leadership positions. We work with a lot of the businesses to teach them, to educate them on what they're getting with a veteran and the benefits. We have employment vocational rehab program in our program. And then also at the community level, we go out and we work with the community businesses as well as the civilians.
How long will this really, we're turning veterans for another year, but how long does a program like Warrior to Citizen have to be in place to help the people that have returned? I mean, is that a five-year thing, a three-year thing, or does it ever stop?
Well, unfortunately, PTSD is very difficult to predict. A lot of soldiers come back. They don't have any problems. Some soldiers come back, and within 30, 40 days, they have a problem. Others come back and are back here 5, 10 years, 20 years before they have a problem. So as far as how long will the program go, it'll go as long as we have veterans who are suffering from PTSD and other psychological effects of the war.
Now, who do you have on your board of directors and as leaders of Warrior to Citizen?
Well, the director is Colonel Mike Roberts. The other co-founder is General Owings. Rocky Blair, a former player from the Pittsburgh Steelers, is also on the board of directors. A gentleman, Charles Clark, used to be the administrator for several VA hospitals is on a board, and there are others.
Four organizations, let's start with that, four organizations that are corporations or nonprofits who might be potential funding sources, how would they get in touch with Warrior to Citizen? Who would they be, who should they contact?
Well, they can go to the website.
Which is
Warrior 2, the number 2, not T-W-O, WarriorToCitizens.org.
Citizen.
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 Right.
.org.
Or they can call 404-862-2141, and they'll get me directly.
Well, great. A wonderful program, and thank you so much for coming in this morning. Can you wait for our other guests and stay in the station with us?
Sure will.
Great.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, Adrian, you're the marketing guru who is responsible for a lot of the signage and branding that we see all over, and you started in South Africa and have a company called Expand a Brand. Explain what's Expand a Brand. What does it do, and how does it help your branding?
Okay, I'd like to start by clearing up the fact that I'm not a guru. Don't profess to be. Never have. I've got some good ideas. I've got some bad ones too. But
you're also not from around these parts, are you?
No, I'm from the south though, just way south of here. Yeah, from South Africa. We started our business in 97. We invented a lot of the products that you see out there, folding A-frames, teardrop-shaped banners. And I guess the reason we came here is we're in 47 countries around the world, and we usually do those through distributors. And we find that in certain markets, the distributors do a great job for 3 or 4 years, and then they kind of fall off the bus. So we just decided to come set up our own office here. We still have a distributor that also sells our product more on the west side of the country. And it's been exciting to start, a little bit more difficult than I thought it would be, but it's been exciting.
What have been the challenges?
If I look at, well, certainly there's a number of different challenges. Some are related to legislation, that you can't put signs up outside of stores and things like that, but that's not most of what we do. Most of what we do is event-based. What we find is people have always done something a certain way, sort of for the last 10 or 15 years, and the resistance to change has been quite a shock to me, really. And it's not across the board, but there are some companies that just don't want to change. And once we show them some ideas and stuff, then we find that the engagement happens, and then they move across. But it's sort of a 6-month sales cycle, which I didn't expect.
You would hardly think that would be true with signage and branding stuff, particularly particularly trade shows, which I infer is kind of one of your big markets.
Yeah, but then having said that, just because we're ready to sell to a customer doesn't mean they're ready to buy. Yeah, so that's one of the challenges, but a lot of the things that I've found have been the differences of the market. What's different here? Even though we've had a distributor here, we didn't get a lot of that market intel back. We find all around the world we got a lot more feedback than we did from our agent here, and I guess that's maybe why the initial 3 to 6 months was a bit tough.
Do you think that's just to kind of hold it close to your chest, don't show your cards kind of thing, trying to protect their unique knowledge or what they think is unique? Compared to other countries, that's different, I presume, from your comments.
Not all of the countries have been as willing to share, but that certainly was a part of it, that we didn't get as much of the information back that perhaps we could have used.
Do you find that other countries are more receptive to new ideas and try things out?
Again, it's a mixed bag. I find the Southern Hemisphere countries are typically more willing to take a risk. If you look at it, I guess the old world, if you like, kind of moves a bit slower, and the new world moves a little quicker. That's really what it boils down to.
I see. In terms of the products you offer, you not only have created some of these designs, but how do you work with a client to help them with their branding and get the proper signage in place for them?
Okay. I think let's take an event as an example. What you're trying to do as the company that's hosting the event is you're trying to make it that little bit more special, a bit different from what you may have done last year, year before that. And you're trying to make an impact with your customers that has to be different from what your competitors are doing. So what we'll often do is sit down with a customer and say, well, what is it that you want to achieve? What are the objectives, the key objectives you want to get out of the specific event? And it may be something as small as a golf day, or it could be a launch of a new product, even a launch of a new business. And what we'll do is not just sell them our product, okay? We'll work with them on a consultative basis and bring in other entities that may provide lighting, stages, audio, visual stuff that we just don't do, but we package together something that just works for the event. Even if it's obviously, if we print fabric, it makes us more money. But we've often done events where there's just regular fabric that you can buy in a fabric store, and then use lighting on it just to create more impact. Take Coca-Cola for example. That Coke Red, you don't have to have everything branded Coca-Cola. You just have to have that matching red somewhere in the room, and you create that same impact. So you have the brand interspersed with just red fabric,
which carries the brand message because that's such a strongly imprinted brand.
Yeah.
I know that I've been in the trade show business myself and did a whole bunch of them in my old company. But one of the things you notice is that it is very difficult in a trade show to attract attention because you're in there with, from 100 probably to as many as, like CES. I mean, it fills up Las Vegas. How do you use your material to set yourself apart and attract attention and say, hey, these people have something new that I need to see?
Okay, I mean, if you take some of the trade shows that I guess we've all been to, typically a guy will have a tablecloth, he'll have a pull-up banner, much like this one that's in the studio here, and he might have a back wall, okay? And then everyone's kind of got the same. And what your customer is looking at the trade show is looking for something that makes his booth stand out and be a bit different. You know, some of the things that we've done in the past is we've made a little putt-putt course inside of the booth. We have new products that we're always working on that can create a back wall without a wall, if you know what I mean. So you've got two sides that you can brand. You can put it through the middle of your booth rather than right at the back. Lighting, movement, all of these things attract attention. No one sees the tablecloth and the pull-up banner anymore, because what they're doing is they're walking through a sea of this stuff, and they're looking for something that just catches their eye, and it can be movement and light typically, or sound even, just to attract people.
Do you have any pre-show work you do with your clients to help them drive traffic to their booth?
Yes. There's a show in Orlando later this month. And we spent a lot of time consulting with a company that's going to be attending the show. Did they take all of our ideas on board? No, and we don't expect them to. But what they wanted to do, they took a very big space. It's between, I think it's 30 by 20 booth space. So they've got a lot of space, and they need to not fill it. They don't want to clutter it, but they need it to look a little bit different. So we spent a long time before the show, just working on some options for them, drawings, those types of things.
Yeah, and helping them turn that into a message that, you know,
yes,
talks about here's our new product, mm-hmm, attracts, you know, centers the attention on that. So when you're walking down that aisle and seeing this, you know, as you know, a sea of people in there,
yep,
there's something that stands out, grabs your attention, and says, I need to see that.
Yes.
Rather than just walk by. And, I mean, you can miss it because, I mean, you know, you're sensory overload in those places.
Mm-hmm.
And there's somebody always handing out pins with their name on it and crazy stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it also goes to, it's not just ideas and those things. I think the important thing is to have a culture in the business. And what we try and do is have fun in our business. We're all quite colorful characters in the office. I'm probably the most colorful. Certainly the languages. It's people engage with you if you've got different ideas or you're a little bit different. And you're going to buy from a company that portrays themselves as being different from everybody else. And that's the thing that you're trying to achieve for your customer at a trade show.
Well, you said that you have a rather unique work environment and a fairly colorful. I mean, does that mean the walls are painted? Or I know we've heard about the colorful language, but fill us in on some of the other things that make your office unique.
The walls would be painted if I could put... I'm in a facility now that I can't deface, should we say. What we do in most of our offices around the world is we have a wallpaper product. It's not paper, it's textile. But we make colorful images all over the wall. But aside from that, you know, we have a great deal of fun at work. There's a lot of banter, and you can imagine we've got quite a few football fans in the office. So this morning was fun because some people were happy, others weren't. It's a fun environment, and we like to sort of take that over to our customers as well. You know, you won't see me pitching up in a suit for a meeting, and then sitting there and taking some notes. And you know, I'm a bit more expressive than that, and everyone in the office is kind of the same way.
Would you subscribe to the theory that if you're not having fun at work, you're not doing it right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's nothing worse than dragging your behind, you know, I had to be careful there, into the office every day. And then, you know, you can't wait for the end of the day. 5 o'clock comes, jump in the car, off you dot home. There's nothing worse than doing that. If you're doing that, then don't bother.
Well, you're in a creative business. And
yeah.
And to be creative, you have to have an open mind.
Correct. And also, you know, it's not just one brain on a stick. It's you've got to have a whole lot of other creative people that are in your office so that you can bounce ideas around. We don't always agree, okay? And there's some strong opinions in that office. But that's, I guess, what makes us the way we are. We are not going to give our customers the best we possibly can give them if we haven't debated it ourselves. And it's healthy debate.
So in summary, would you say that you have a full range of signage, attention-attracting devices for outdoor, indoor, trade shows, point of sale for businesses and organizations?
Yes, and certainly, everyone's going to tell you that. Do we make it all? No. Because it runs from truck-sized stuff that you'll have in big show booths. You've got some that's almost like some of the show booths are the size of a house. We don't do all of that stuff, but we know people who do. And we engage with those people, and we'll deliver that solution and package it up for our customers.
So do you contract that out? Do you act as kind of a general contractor for the shows?
No. We can do, but we typically don't. We will build that relationship for our customers with them directly. I don't believe in packaging everything, marking it up, and then making money out of someone else's work. And that might sound a bit philanthropic, but it doesn't sit with us to not pass on the best deal to the customer.
So it sounds like you've really got a good business strategy that's customer focused, one where you're saying, when you work with us, we'll not only bring great marketing and attention attracting ideas, but we'll put you in touch with and act as the interface to help you find the very best vendors for the kind of thing that you need to make your program a great success.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that's really unique. Yep. When you're putting somebody that's putting their customer first, and I congratulate you for it.
Well, and for us, it's, we pride ourselves on having what we believe to be the best quality product and service offering that's out there. And we will only partner with organizations that deliver a similar level of service. So we want to be able to be in a position where we can suggest to a customer they work with somebody and we know we can stand by that work. So if you're asking us for advice on who to use, you can be pretty assured that it'll be a good outfit that you're working with.
Well, it sounds like a great company. For our listeners, how do they get in touch with you? What is your website, your email address, and a phone number?
Okay. So it's expandabrand.com. No funny spelling. It's expandabrand.com. And you can get us on the office number is 678-597-4260. I'd like people to go to the website because we've just launched a new version of our website. Is it perfect? No, but then I'm a perfectionist, so and I'd welcome any feedback. There's a contact us button at the back end, and you can tell it like it is. We'll take all criticism welcome.
Well, that's a refreshing change, and thank you so much. Can you remain in the station for our last guest?
Certainly.
Well, Marion, welcome to our show.
Glad to be here.
If I begin to start jabbering and talking in tongues, it's because you're a hypnotherapist, and I may not know this is going on, and I'm going to be hypnotized, and I'll say funny things.
Oh, can we get over that myth right away? Okay.
tell us what you do and about the hypnotherapy and your coaching business.
Right. Well, I've been doing hypnotherapy, success coaching before they even came up with the term coach. So I've been doing it for over 20 years. I do business and personal development for people. And the crux of it is that the subconscious mind is 90% of your mind's power. Your intellect is 10%. So many times we think we're really being free or going forward because we understand something intellectually. And really what's the driver is the subconscious. And so to give you a visual of that, imagine a tug of war between 10 people and 90. The 90 people are always going to win. I equate the subconscious to like a big dumb computer. It has no logic, it has no reason, but it's got all the power. So you can have very different beliefs subconsciously as opposed to intellectually.
So you're running a program in the background that's really controlling the bulk of how you react to situations.
Absolutely, and that's a lot of it's been programmed since the time we've been, a little child, or from different instances in our, adulthood. And you can kind of tell what's in your subconscious by, you know, maybe reoccurring things, or when you're trying to reach a certain goal and you haven't been able to do it. Or my favorite is when you know what to do and you don't do it. The intellect knows what to do, right? If you think it's all intellectual, then all the great training, all the great reason, you should be able to get anything. But how many people do you know what to do and just don't do it? They self-sabotage themselves.
You see all sorts of help self-help programs and seminars, books, you know.
It's all based on the intellect. And so that's why people keep going back.
Their behavior does not change because their belief doesn't change.
Exactly. I can give you a story on that. I had a CFO, very smart, came to me for motivation because basically he was playing computer games all day. He was in his own business. So, you know, he wasn't going to, you know, do some business. He was going to lose it. Intellectually, if you went to a different kind of business coach, they'd have you be accountable and all that. That's the intellect. He already knew what to do. You keep telling this guy to keep doing it. He wasn't going to do it. He was self-sabotaging himself like crazy. His behind off, yes. And so by asking questions, and that's how I work with my coaching, I then find what is really there in the subconscious. It paints me a picture of the beliefs. So asking questions, I found out that he had been fired for being ethical, which is actually for a CFO not a bad thing. But he didn't realize he was still angry. Very analytical person. And I said, well, what did you do with the anger? He goes, oh, I've dealt with it. He dealt with it intellectually. Repressed anger for, you know, your listeners can create depression, self-sabotage, lack of motivation. He wasn't depressed. He was just, you know, lack of motivation and self-sabotaging himself like crazy. So even though he didn't feel it, because subconscious, that's the word, it's underneath the radar, we worked with the anger first, and in one session, he got a 50% increase in his motivation. We didn't even work with motivation yet, because I get down to the cause with people. But before we go on, I want to demyth the illusion about hypnosis, because so many people have such a misconception about it. Okay, because your joke in the beginning was like I was going to control you.
I'm feeling sleepy.
I know. Well, I mean, yes, there is the stage show, and yes, those people are doing things, but they can never make anybody do anything they don't want to do. I mean, you can't make them go out and kill people or rob people or even come back to session. You can't do that. They don't even have it as a way to do it in court, because you can lie. I mean, you're in total control. It's just a delivery system. I want you to imagine it as an incredibly good teacher, a delivery system to get the information into the subconscious mind. So if I was a techie, I'm actually, you know, for a computer, I'm taking out the bad program and putting in the good program. And that's the way I try to educate my clients. They're totally aware of what's going on when I'm communicating to them. It's just I work with music, and I work with symbology and inferences and all the ways the subconscious can help the mind absorb information.
Interesting. What is your background? How did you come into this kind of coaching?
Well, honestly, I really asked for my purpose. You know, you can say God, life, whatever. I asked. I wanted to be happy for the rest of my life. I didn't want to work with numbers, and I wanted to have my own business. And at that time, there was no coaches. It was just that, and it was very different. And I always had a knack for getting down to the surface with people, because I did a lot of work on myself, and I just took to it, kind of like a duck, without the quack. No.
Like so many people that become very interested in a subject, over time, you know, you absorb, you know, the ideas of many and put them into practice. You know, what's been most influential in your development and how you approach people in your coaching?
Oh, are you talking about somebody outside of myself?
Could be.
Actually, I'd have to say it was my own development more than anything else. I was on my own when I was 15, and I had to really observe life tremendously, and I've overcome a tremendous amount of things in my life. So that, I think, makes me very unique and very able to help people and help them understand from a visceral place, so it's not just an intellectual place.
As opposed to someone who has got their PhD, this is kind of a learning, it's kind of like street smarts about how people's minds work.
Exactly. There's different ways. The Buddhists used to say there's different ways of learning. There's ways through books and observing life. And I did read a lot of books, but I also observed life on how things work. And then I also put it into practice, which is the big thing. And since I have overcome so much, including, drugs, mm-hmm. alcohol, eating disorder, bad relationships, my clients do absolutely, see me as someone that has come through and not just preaching.
You said you have both, is it life coaching?
Mm-hmm. I was a life coach before they came up with the term life coach because they couldn't.
I've been doing this for a long time.
You
know, for those of us who really don't understand what a life coach is versus, let's say, a business coach or of course, all of these, I guess, when you put them together, are all success coaching. Explain the differences for our listeners.
The best I can tell you is that I do a combination of both, but a life coach will work with someone having a goal and help them, just like a coach in, like, say, football. They help give them exercises, approaches, viewpoints, but the person has to go out and do the work. A business coach is going to do the same thing for business. They're uniquely focused on business. My viewpoint is that the reason I say I'm a hypnotherapist success coach, it's success in either business or your personal realm, and we usually end up working on both. When you change your beliefs, unconsciously you change how you act and how you react. So I do give them homework, I do give them structure and accountability, but the biggest premise that's different than mine than any other coaching is that I actually change the core beliefs that have been keeping them from being happy.
Now, that's really an important part, I think, to really focus on, is that as you talk about the intellect, mm-hmm. no amount of reading will make you change your behavior unless you're a fairly unique individual.
Right.
It may change some, but isn't that why there's so many people that are in coaching or in industrial psychology to help people, because they can't do it on their own?
Exactly. I mean, the first step is intellectually understanding something. And then, yes, if something, let's say that they don't have a core belief that's keeping them back, if they have that talent and that ability to learn, having that kind of coach will be invariably really positive for them. But 9 times out of 10, there's usually a belief that is keeping them, beliefs or emotions, just like my CFO, that keeps them from going forward. I'll give you another story. I had a very successful lady that came to me. She was in her 50s, but she came in for personal, growth. Mm-hmm. She had never been happy. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being happy, she was at a 1 for most of her life. And I asked her what other kinds of work that she did. I mean, you name it. She did, everything from going away to Sierra Tucson, the places that really work on you intellectually and with psychologists, to biofeedback, to other kinds of therapy, to drugs, and she had never been happy. She knew all about her issues, more than anybody else I had ever met, because she had so much therapy and so much work and training, but she still felt lousy about herself. After about 3 months with me, we worked on changing the beliefs she already knew about intellectually. On a scale of 1 to 10, she was an 8. Now, does this stick? Yes, it does. She came back about 10 years later. She had been married. She's happy. And she just wanted a new purpose. She got tired of making so much money.
Gosh, terrible problem.
Terrible problem. She wanted a different purpose. So with my coaching, I do teach people how to stay, in that, self-coaching mode, so they understand themselves. Like, okay, if you start to get depressed or self-sabotage, you probably have anger. Okay, how can you deal with it? I give them tools as well as the hypnotic CD when they come into my office. And usually my clients, if it's the right method for them, they start seeing results right away.
Well, doesn't this say that the power of working one-on-one with a coach, somebody that will work with you, is a great is really great compared to seminars, because if seminars would change behavior, we'd have more great salespeople in America than any country in the world.
You got it. You got it. It's great for the tactical information. But if you can't absorb that information, that's where the problem comes
Or act on it, more importantly.
Or act on it, exactly. That's what I mean by absorb it. By absorb it, mean you're going to practice it, you're going to act on it, you're going to create it.
Interesting. I think that's probably the first coach that we've interviewed that talked about the underlying belief systems that that motivate people or hold them back.
Oh, my goodness. I can't imagine coaching any other way.
Yeah, I mean, I know some coaches that, you know, they pay a lot more attention to that than, you know, others do.
Yeah.
Because it's not just about the knowledge. It's also about the motivations and the drives that make somebody take action.
Well, if you have great training and unconsciously you feel you're not worthy, and that's 90% of your mind's power, and I'm not saying that you even have that as a belief intellectually, you are going to play out that belief of unworthiness, and you're going to maybe pick partners that aren't right for you or self-sabotage yourself in jobs. You know, that's just one belief that can really impact your life.
You know, that I pick on sales a lot, because how many people in business say, I can't sell?
Right.
You know, but yet we sell our ideas to people all the time and don't think anything of it. But if you say, well, we've got a job and you need to sell, I mean, you know, they would probably prefer to be boiled slowly in oil.
Yeah.
You know, then do that. And that's an example of, you know, self-limiting beliefs.
That is an example. I mean, I have people that go from corporate America to starting their own business, and you do have to sell. You do have to market. And it comes down to them believing in themselves enough and understanding that sales isn't an evil thing. I've had people with those belief systems, or people that, again, the worth, you know, they can sell for other people, other companies, but when it comes down to selling for themselves, oh my goodness, they'll stop in a minute and they'll self-sabotage themselves.
Absolutely fascinating. Yeah. You know, so this is not just for corporate executives. It's really for individuals. It's for people that are leaving the corporate world, going into business for themselves.
Exactly.
It's people that are in a job where their beliefs are, and they've gone to all the seminars, nothing's working.
Exactly. Again, a big clue is that when you keep complaining about the same thing over a period of time, you know you haven't gotten the answer, you're not moving forward, or when you know what to do and you're not doing it. The other faction besides the business, I love entrepreneurs because they want to break through. And it usually means they're going to have to break through on many different levels within themselves, but they see the change. Again, I can tell my clients what they can expect from me. There's no one method that's 100% with 100% of people, but I've been doing this long enough that if it's right for them, they'll start seeing results in a session or so. They don't have to wait 6 months to see if it's working. They'll know in that time, they'll notice the difference in their thinking, feeling, or actions. And then they know, okay, we're hitting the subconscious.
Well, it's very interesting, and it's a fascinating area to help people that people really don't understand, know much about. If people want to get in touch with you, how do they get in touch?
Well, I just happen to have that information. No,
well-prepared.
Well-prepared.
No self-limiting belief. You
didn't
leave it at home
all.
Or anything.
No, in fact, I'm offering all your listeners, too, a free consultation, a free session with myself, so they themselves can understand it. If they're local, they can come in and they can, you know, experience what it is to be hypnotized. I won't be doing any therapy, but they can understand it so they know they're not going to be a duck or a chicken or anything else like that. And
you won't be on the next YouTube video.
No. So they just understand it, you know. If they don't understand something, then they're limiting themselves. You know, they don't have to be afraid of getting educated. But my phone number is 770-956-0554. Is the best way to get a hold of me. And then my website is marianmassey.com. Now, let me spell that for you because I spell my name different. MarianMassey.com.
Well, super. Marian, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, this is great.
This has been a fantastic program, and I thank you for coming. Look forward to having you back.
I'd love to be back. We'll
Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.